why is this meaningful? People want to know. The generation of new research, but implementing.
Good morning.
Yes.
Welcome to Friday, September 21st, the third day of the fifth National DNP Conference. Thank you for being here this morning. We have a very lively crowd. I'm pleased to see us. I hope everybody enjoyed your breakfast and have rested well. I can speak from my experience. I stayed up late last night, had a great time. And I'm going to plow through today regardless of my fatigue. I hope you can do the same. I'd like to make a few announcements, please. I'd like to make a few announcements to make sure that we're all on the same page. First of all, I think we need to share some thanks to the folks who made this conference truly possible. And it is not the folks who coordinated it. It is not the folks who ran the AV. It's not the hotel. It is the presenters. And the presenters are the substance of this conference. The presenters, podium and poster presenters, are the ones who made this conference as rich and robust and scholarly and academic as it can be. So I really think we should owe ourselves a round of applause for all of the presentations that have made to this conference. Now, those of us who have put together conferences in the past and made sure that we had a nice division between exhibitors and education, which is a very important part. We do not want any crossover or limitations or indication that there is some bias. But we do have to thank our sponsors, and some of the sponsors have been absolutely amazing. So I'd like to list some of them to you. First of all, Duke University was a gold sponsor and helped us facilitate and sponsored our keynote speaker, Dr. Maria Nat Brown. Another gold sponsor was Loyola University and also Madonna University. We know we have some graduates from Madonna University here. Yay! So thank you, Madonna University, for enhancing the caliber of the overall conference. I'd like to list some of our exhibitors, and these exhibitors offer services that are of value to all of us. Jones and Bartlett Learning, Springer Publishing, Brandman University, CMF Group, Azusa Pacific University, Medical Protective, CHIPS Health and Wellness Center, University of Missouri Sinclair, University of Mississippi, STM Learning, and Practitioner Educational Associates. We thank you all for being a part of this entire conference. Yes, thank you. Couple of other messages. The poster boards will begin to be broken down at 2 o'clock. And so during the lunch break, these posters in this room will be brought out of here. I recommend that if you have a poster, please take it down before lunch, because the guys who break down and take these away are not going to have as much respect for the content as we do. And they don't have the interest. So please make sure your poster is down before lunch, because they will be out there, and at 2 o'clock they're going to disappear. The breaks that we have scheduled right after Dr. Wolford's presentation, I think we have a little bit too much time in there. So it's going to give us the opportunity to let Dr. Wolford continue and have any questions and discussions afterward as we prepare for the panel discussion that will follow immediately. So I'm recommending, instead of leaving and wandering around and coming back a half an hour later, stretch, stand up. If you need to take a break, by all means do. But we will probably just move right into the panel discussion. And we want to make sure you do not disappear. Now, I have introduced many people, but there's two people that I have not introduced, and I will introduce one who will meet with you later on today. That is my colleague, Dr. Joyce Williams. She is also one of the co-founders of Doctors of Nursing Practice, and also Dr. Nancy Cabellis. Let me share a little bit about our history. I have recanted the history of how we came about in the formation of this group. In the very first class at University of Tennessee Health Science Center, we took a philosophy of science class. And I don't remember what the topic was, but we got off it. And we started talking like, well, there are no other DNPs on the planet. Where are they? How do we communicate with them? How do we get some information to and from? And we said, well, we should do this, we should do that. And we started pulling together ideas for a business plan. And then the instructor, who probably Dr. Stegbauer, kindly said, nice discussion group, this is not topic, come on, get back to what you need to do. So we just kind of tabled it. A year later, in an advanced leadership class, we had two options to, as small groups, to write a grant or a business plan. So we wrote the business plan. That quarter completed early December. By the middle to the end of November of 2006, we were incorporated. 4 months later, we had the website up. And since then, it's just evolved from there. The University of Tennessee helped with that first conference in 2008, and since then, we have been independent of all universities. So in that aspect, they kick-started us and pushed us forward. And I'm very proud of University of Tennessee, so I'll give that my shameless plug to them also. But with that in mind, some of my colleagues here have been instrumental in helping to grow the organization in many great ways. So I'd like to introduce Dr. Nancy Cabellas to you right now, one of our colleagues and founders of the organization, and point out to you, Nancy Cabellas is international. I don't think she knows where to put her feet for more than 6 months at a time. She has spent many of her years in Bogota, many years in Bogota, Colombia, and many years in Kenya. And she will, if you'd like to share some of your background in that aspect, or would like to, because if I tried to do it and I missed it, then it would be embarrassing. So I will leave this to you, and please welcome Dr. Nancy Cabellas.
David, we've come a long way.
Yes, we have.
Good morning, everybody. I'm really a non-traditional DNP in every sense. Started out as an RN, and not too long after that, I was a Connecticut State Trooper. And I worked in law enforcement for 20 years with the Connecticut State Police. And during that time, I learned about a master's degree in forensic nursing program. It was just starting up at Quinnipiac, which is located right in Connecticut. So I registered and was in the first graduating class. So now I had a master's in forensic nursing, and at this time I was working as a detective in the major crime squad with the Connecticut State Police. So I'm the go-to person on the team. I mean, I'm the nurse. I bring my nursing skills to every crime scene, and it really served me well. And then I learned about a program at the University of Tennessee that David just mentioned to get a DNP with a forensic track. And there was no other place in the country that offered that track. So Joyce Williams and I were friends at the time, and we were both searching for a doctoral program that we felt was a good fit. And we jumped into that, and that's where we met David, and here we are today. So I've been working, well, I'll tell you that my DNP program at the time was really had a lot of credits, I mean, 50 plus nearly 60 credits when we first went into it, and the clinical component was nearly 1,000 hours. And working full-time as a state trooper and doing that was a lot for me, and I was eligible to retire. So I did retire in 2006, finished the DNP in 2007, but then became a consultant with the United States Department of Justice, and I went into countries where there were big problems with sexual violence, human trafficking issues, and so on. And so I went to Bogota, Colombia, where there was a 93% impunity rate with sex crimes. Nobody went to jail. And the cycle just kept continuing and continuing. But with assistance from the Department of Justice, they've been able to train and cross-train doctors, nurses, lawyers, police, and put some of these people away. And last I heard, they convicted 19 serial rapists and, you know, several other single rapist cases. So when that program ended for me, I moved to Nairobi, Kenya. And I actually missed the first two DNP conferences because I was based in Nairobi and couldn't make it back here to join you all. But there I was the program manager for the Women's Justice and Empowerment Initiative. And again, cross-trained a lot of police and lawyers. And they had a new law, but no one knew how to implement it. So when I was training the police, I was also recognizing that the need for evidence collection and the healthcare side of the system wasn't happening. So in Kenya's biggest hospital, known as Kenyatta National Hospital, 2,000-bed facility, I started the very first sexual assault forensic examiner program in the country, training a pilot of 50 nurses, doctors, and clinical officers on comprehensive care of the rape survivor. So that program is still up and running. Those nurses, they took the ball and they're running with it, and they changed hospital policy and they're doing really good things. And I go back every few months or so with Physicians for Human Rights as their lead forensic consultant, and we're building the network. We're doing more cross-training, and you know, we think we're making a difference in the arena of evidence collection and documentation. So last year, thank you. So last year I had the privilege of attending the ICN, my very first ICN in Malta. Did anybody go to that meeting? I mean, I was blown away. There were thousands of nurses there, and I met Dr. Wolford there. And we were with a group of like 9 other nurses from New York, and they rented this villa, which was really like an old castle right on the Mediterranean. And it was my pleasure to find out that Dr. Wolford was my roommate. So we got to know each other, and I was really impressed with her. She is a DNP, and she's also working on her EDD, and I mean, balancing big careers and family and special needs child and just a lot of things on her plate. So I just want to go on and tell you that she's been a nurse for 19 years. She served in various roles from staff nurse all the way up to directors. She's worked in many clinical settings, medicine, surgery, critical care, academic setting, instructing LPNs and nurses. And David, this iPad just shut off. So fortunately, I have my little phone here, and maybe I can finish her bio on my little phone. You have it? Oh, fantastic. I'm sorry for the interruption. Okay, fantastic. So currently, Dr. Wolford is the corporate director for nursing education at the North Shore Long Island Jewish System. In this role, she works closely alongside other health system leaders on efforts to move healthcare systems towards its goals of superior patient care, quality, and safety. She oversees educational activities that impact the health systems of over 12,000 nurses in 15 hospitals and countless centers in the metropolitan New York area. And she's presented on nursing and education topics nationally and internationally. I heard her speak in Malta, and I was so wowed, and I said, she's got to be at this conference here to join the rest of us DNPs. She earned her bachelor's degree in nursing from Pace University and a master's in adult health nursing as a clinical nurse specialist from Hunter College, City University of New York, a postmaster's certificate in nursing education from the College of New Rochelle, and a doctor of nursing practice from Case Western Reserve University. She is presently near completion of her second doctoral degree, a doctor of education from Teachers College, Columbia University. Dr. Wolford, who believes in the importance of education, commitment, and mentorship, has earned numerous awards and holds several national certifications. She is a 19-time scholarship recipient and a fellow of the New York Academy of Medicine. And please warmly welcome Dr. Lynette Wolford.
She talks about me, but she's really the amazing one. When we met in Malta, I was equally impressed. I thought to myself, my goodness, she's a nurse, and she was a state trooper, and now she's a forensic nurse, and her work is so incredible. I'm so excited to be here with you today, colleagues. I'd like to thank Dr. David O'Dell, Dr. Nancy Cabellis, Dr. Joyce Williams. I'd like to thank Fallon and Donald Grogg, who are around here somewhere, and I'd like to thank the AV team in the back. For the work that they have done in making sure that this presentation is organized today. So this conference has very specific objectives, and in case you're not familiar with what they are, I'm going to remind you. It was to identify how DNP graduates are addressing current healthcare delivery issues, to describe nursing practice doctorate outcomes in clinical research, leadership, education, and policy, to define evidence-based DNP teaching themes that reflect the abilities of graduates to impact nursing education outcomes, and to identify exceptional contributions to the discipline of nursing specific to improved outcomes as a result of the DNP. The conference description also reflected that the overall thrust of this year's theme is an exploration and demonstration of how DNPs are influencing nursing education. So over the past few days, both you and I have experienced presentations regarding most of these objectives. And with that, as the last keynote speaker for the conference, I would like to commend all of the poster and podium presenters for a job well done. And although my presentation might not be quite a program of education outcomes or an educational offering as defined by nursing professional development scope and standards, still, like any prudent nurse educator, I have my own objectives. So my main objectives here today are to engage you in some thoughtful internal reflection and outward discussion about the message being delivered to nursing about nursing today and nursing in the future. And I'd also like to take you on a journey of examining the opportunities for DNPs to impact evidence-based nursing education from a practice perspective. So that you know a little more about me, I am a DNP, and that's me in the back there when I got my DNP with a cohort of nurses from the health system where I'm employed. People often ask about why I pursued both a DNP and an EdD, so I'll just address that right up front and let you know that, in fact, I started the EdD before I started the DNP. And the EdD program at Teachers College, if anyone's familiar with their curriculum, you know that it's a research-based program. Although it's an EdD, it has very intensive methodology and measurement components and so forth. And an opportunity arose for me to enroll in this DNP program, which was going to focus on organizational leadership. And I'm in a place where education and organizational leadership meet. And I thought this was going to be a great opportunity for me to, kind of close that loop in terms of my academic preparation. So I do spend most of my time at North Shore LIJ Health System, which is in the metropolitan New York area. There are 17 hospitals that and 350 centers that span Long Island, Queens, Staten Island, Manhattan, and recently New Jersey through an affiliation. There are 43,000 employees in the health system, including 13,000 nurses. And so my responsibility there is pretty vast as corporate director, and really does impact many nurses and many patients and families. Like David, I will shamelessly plug the North Shore LIJ Health System and say that after I deliver this presentation, I will not be able to stay much longer. We will have some dialogue because I do have to catch a flight. The National League for Nursing, you may be aware, this year was the first year that they opened up the Center of Excellence designation to healthcare organizations. Traditionally, it had only been open to schools of nursing. And North Shore, I was the chief author of our submission for North Shore LIJ, and we were one of only three organizations in the country that earned the designation. So I get to go and have fun at the gala this evening in California when we are recognized. So this is my landscape, and I'm going to talk to you a little bit about landscape, the healthcare landscape. Now, of course, when you stop to look at the landscape of anything, it's highly influenced by your vantage point. This is the view at the top of a bus. Now, just the other day, I was in a conversation with colleagues where we discussed this idea of being thrown under the bus. And my colleagues were, I don't have to tell you, that they were very negative about the position of being thrown under the bus. But they found it enlightening when I pointed out to them that being under the bus might not be such a bad place from a point of change effectiveness anyway. Because from under the bus, you get a very clear view of the real complexities, the mechanics, what needs to be done. So being under the bus might just be the best place to be when you're thinking about problem solving. Because it's all about your view on the landscape. Now, if you these pictures, just as an FYI, are images from an accident that took place on a freeway here in Missouri 2 years ago, involving two school buses that were packed with students. They were headed to an amusement park, and there was also a tractor trailer and a pickup truck on the freeway. The pickup truck crashed into the back of the tractor trailer, and then the school bus slammed into the pickup truck, and then the second school bus slammed into the first school bus. But from under the bus, the rescue workers had the best view of what needed to be done. So over the last 2 days, I've heard some, or overheard, you know, sometimes some conversation about us as DNPs and where we are in the landscape of doctorally prepared nurses and in healthcare. And sometimes I think we can be a little unsatisfied and feel like we might be under the bus. But under the bus is not a bad place to be. It's all about your landscape, and that's my point. But today we're not here to talk about buses. We're actually here to talk about carpets. Nursing is being called on the carpet, front and center, to take a leading role in healthcare of the future. I was intrigued to hear some colleagues who are from dental work, dental and social work, say to me shortly after the release of the Future of Nursing report that you, meaning us collectively, nurses, you are so lucky. Now, I'll admit that I have not read every word of the report. Has anybody in here read every word of the report? Wow, you deserve a round of applause, right? But I have read most of it, right? The executive summaries and of course all of the key messages and recommendations and so forth. And with that in mind, I couldn't understand why on earth would these folks say we, nursing, are lucky? And they went on to explain that they wished that the IOM had identified them as central and key to healthcare and brought them to the forefront with a report especially dedicated to their profession. So I hadn't thought about it like that. This was a new perspective, you know, a new vantage point, a different angle on the landscape. So being front and center in the carpet was something that our healthcare colleagues viewed as a gift for nursing because they saw themselves in the back and they saw nursing being thrust in the front. So indeed, as I said earlier, when you stop to look at the landscape of anything, it's highly influenced by your vantage point. So I'm here from the great city of New York. Anybody else from New York? Okay, I've got one or two, three, four, okay, my few lone friends from New York. And this is the landscape that myself and many New Yorkers took comfort in for many years. This is our beautiful city. We have a unique and beautiful skyline, the one and only Lady Liberty. And this is the way our landscape had always been. And this is the way we figured it would always remain. So we thought, until a fateful sunny Tuesday morning in September of 2001. So we New Yorkers had to stop and reevaluate. Our landscape has changed, forever changed. And as much as we may have been used to or taken great comfort in the perspective we knew for so long, we knew we needed to look at the landscape for what it is now, what it looks like today. So of course, this was a painful lesson for us and a lesson from which many around us would learn and the world would learn. And many messages were attached to this lesson, to the events and the milestones around what shaped our new landscape. But no matter what message each of us heard, one thing was clear. We couldn't evaluate, make decisions, gauge the current state of affairs, or plan our next steps if we were looking at yesterday's landscape. So we would have to regroup, collect ourselves, and look at where things are now and where we might be headed. Now, the need for that change was clear, clear as spring water for those of us who are at the epicenter. But maybe, just maybe, if you're not at the epicenter, you may have a different perspective. In fact, from this beautiful city of St. Louis, you have a completely different purview. In many ways, the landscape has not changed at all. Not in your backyard, anyway. But everyone here is wise, and we know that our perspectives cannot be limited solely to our individual vantage point. We need to understand what's going on around us, near and far, because it all has an impact on us as individuals and as a collective whole. So from time to time, we need to take a step back and view the landscape like this, taking on a more global perspective and asking a set of critical questions like, what's the big picture? And are the issues that are going on in my backyard relevant across other backyards in America? And are my concerns unique, or am I amidst a larger phenomenon? So colleagues, this is the same framework I suggest we use when we assess and analyze the state of nursing, nursing education, and us as DNPs. What's happening in our backyards? What's happening in our neighbors' backyards? Our neighbors being other nurses, physicians, allied health colleagues, patients, families. And how is what's going on impacting me and the collective us? Well, I can tell you what's happening in our collective backyard. First, finally, a position has been taken on the practice doctorate for nursing. Now, all is not perfect, but this is major progress. We're not debating whether we should or shouldn't do this. We're not wrapping ourselves in bureaucratic red tape. Our leading organizations have taken a position, and we may need to rally in support behind it, at least behind the concept. Now, this has tremendous implications in the practice setting, because on the healthcare team, all too often, the nurse is the least educated member of the team. And I believe I'm correct when I say that no other profession recognizes in their field a professional without at least a bachelor's degree. Now, many of you in this room may have participated in a very simple poll that I placed on the conference website. It was not intended to be research, and that is a disclaimer. I have to state that, especially for those of you researchers in the room. It was just a simple poll. Demographic information was not collected, but I wanted to get an understanding of the perspectives of my DNP colleagues, some of whom would be here, who might be here today. So when I asked this question, the highest nursing degree I hold, okay, clearly and logically based on the nature of this conference, the sweeping majority indicated that the DNP was the highest degree they held in nursing. And I know that there are factors that influence areas of study available at the doctoral level historically, you know, for nurses, but this does still underscore the active interest that exists for the DNP degree. So this group here, right, obviously is the DNP group, 62%. Another interesting response I received from that poll was this. So look at the divide on thoughts around whether the DNP should be considered a terminal degree. Again, not getting into research-based versus practice-based degrees, just a matter of opinion. The orange are all the respondents who agree that it should be. And I would like to add that while practice degrees have been distinctly separated from research degrees across the professions, there is an almost unanimous acceptance of the practice degree as the accepted degree terminally for the disciplines in areas of law, medicine, dentistry, and education. In those fields, JDs, MDs, DDSs, or EDDs are not expected to get a research degree in order to be recognized as an expert or to engage in or lead research. So we need to evaluate that position just a little bit further in nursing. Second thing that's going on in our backyard, we're seeing an undeniable proliferation in DNP programs. In just 6 years, the number of schools offering the DNP has increased from 20 programs in 2006 to 184 programs in 2011, with another 160 programs in the planning and development stages. So I know probably in the back you might not be able to see this that well. So this is the growth over the years, the last 6 years, in DNP programs up until 2011. And this is the growth in research-focused doctoral programs. So there's growth in both areas, but it's exponential, right, in DNP programs. And last year, enrollment in DNP programs grew by almost 30%, with over 9,000 students now enrolled in programs. Now, it's logical that the reason that there's so much growth in DNP programs is because there's a strong interest in this program of study. The evidence is pretty clear. Nurses are increasingly enrolling in DNP programs, and this is not a build it and they will come phenomenon. This is more like a they are coming in droves, we better hurry up and build phenomenon, okay? What you're looking at here is the increase in DNP programs, not enrollment, right? But also here, the increase in PhD programs, which has been pretty steady over the years. So DNPs are becoming a critical mass. We are DNP pioneers, and we should be proud of that, but we won't be the lone pioneer much longer. We are on the cusp of not being the sole tuxedo penguin among a sea of other penguins. In my online poll regarding DNP and nursing education, we see that of the respondents, when we remove the 38% here who do not hold a DNP and focus on the remaining respondents, more than half completed their DNP in the last 2 years. That's what that says here. This one is 2 to 5 years, okay? So DNPs are on the rise in a big way, and we can transform the nursing education and healthcare landscape. The third thing I would say to round out the top three happenings in our backyard is that the local, regional, and global arena are busy assessing how the DNP fits in the nursing education puzzle. And that's okay. I've actually heard it said that you know that you've arrived when people are talking about you. So it's a good thing that people are talking about us. So that's what gives us the rhyme and reason, as a matter of fact, you know, to even be here today at wonderful events like this. So as an evaluator of DNP programs with the CCNE, I have also carefully reviewed the doctoral essentials, which was addressed yesterday in the keynote address. And the essentials call for clinical scholarship and analytical methods for evidence-based practice. Those who may not have read the essentials in some time, I can refresh your memory and repeat that the essentials point out that, quote, doctoral programs fall into two principal types, research focus and practice focus, and that practice focused doctoral programs are designed to prepare experts in specialized advanced nursing practice. They focus heavily on practice that is innovative and evidence based and reflect the application of credible research findings. The two types of doctoral programs differ in their goals and the competencies of their graduates. Oops, I'm sorry. They represent complementary alternative approaches to the highest level of educational preparation in nursing. And I point this out because I think it's important that we make sure that this is considered when we inform our discussions and decisions around the fit of the DNP in this nursing education and nursing puzzle in general. The essentials also state that health professionals should be educated to deliver patient-centered care as members of interdisciplinary teams emphasizing evidence-based practice, quality improvement, and informatics. So I say to you that nursing colleagues in the practice, for those of us in the practice setting, our colleagues are physicians, pharmacy, physical therapy, to name a few, and each of these disciplines promotes education at the doctoral level with the MD, the doctor of pharmacy, and the doctor of physical therapy. Essential number three regarding clinical scholarship and analytical methods for evidence-based practice also states that although basic research has been viewed as the first and most essential form of scholarly activity, an enlarged perspective of scholarship has emerged through alternative paradigms that involve more than discovery of new knowledge. And these paradigms recognize that scholars give meaning to isolated facts and make connections across disciplines through the scholarship of integration or application. The scholar applies knowledge to solve a problem via the scholarship of application. This is huge for us in the chain, okay, of nursing education. That's the broken link, and that's where we have a huge opportunity in the application of scholarship and evidence into practice. So this is where implementation science and evidence-based nursing education comes into play. And this is where we as DNPs ought to make our voices very loud and very clear. The application of scholarship involves translation of research into practice and dissemination and integration of new knowledge. These are key activities for us. The scholarship application expands the realm of knowledge beyond mere discovery and directs it toward real-world implementation and evaluation. We need to be able to articulate that the DNP adds value to nursing education by bridging that application gap. We are the ones who need to be able to, in our elevator speech, I heard a lot of talk about elevator speech over the last 2 days. In our elevator speech, we need to be able to inform our colleagues that having a DNP partner advances science, practice, and education through that application and translation gap, bridging that gap. I thought it was wonderful, actually, when I saw on the conference website, this conference website, that the recommendation for poster submissions were submissions that reflected collaborations between PhD and DNP work. Because I thought that that really helped to exemplify just how that partnership works with PhD and DNP prepared nurses. So I applaud the Doctors of Nursing Practice Group for doing that. This is the Grand Canyon, and I'm using it metaphorically, of course, to illustrate that classroom and research are sometimes on one side of the big divide, and practice is on the other side of the big divide, and there's that big gap in the middle, with translation being the bridge. So I hope you're following me with this. So I'm not the only one who feels this way, because interestingly enough, among those who participated in the poll, look at that. Half of them, 50% of the respondents, describe translating research as the DNP's strongest contribution to nursing education. The question is, I believe DNP's strongest contribution to nursing education is in the area of, I don't know if you can read all the choices, generating evidence, that's this response, educating learners, that's this response, translating research, that's that response, and educating patients. Okay, so that was a landslide. So the translation of research into practice is a critical area for DNPs in advancing evidence-based nursing education, especially in the practice setting. Because from the practice perspective, this is a major component of achieving outcomes, and there are many collateral benefits to increasing DNP's roles and presence in the practice setting. You know, the Essentials also mentions that it's the DNP graduates who engage in advanced nursing practice and provide leadership for EBP. And this requires competence in knowledge application activities, that whole translational research domain, okay, and collaboration in research. So some of those collateral benefits, I would argue, are quality outcomes, practice-informing research, improvements in patient-centered care, and certainly excellence at the bedside. I posed the question in the poll, when I think of nursing education, the first thing that comes to mind is, and most respondents selected clinical instruction with nursing students. Okay, the first thing that comes to mind when I think of nursing education. Not far behind that was classroom-based learning. And what came in last, in terms of what comes to mind first, is this idea about the hospital-based nurse educator role. And this is, in fact, a very important role for us to consider as DNP-prepared nurses, because nursing education, nurse educator roles are a gateway to directly impacting patients and practice, as well as a gateway to organizational leadership in the practice setting. When we think about nursing education, I would agree that we probably do default to classrooms and students, but DNPs have tremendous value in workforce development, in practice infrastructure, and especially when you consider the EBP factor as nurse educators, nursing education specialists, NPD professionals, whatever title you use in your area of the country. I also asked, if you have a DNP and you have a role in nursing education, please describe it. I think I asked about 9 questions on this poll. Now, the responses are academic faculty, okay? That's what the majority of respondents selected. Independent practice was here, and hospital-based nursing education was here, not too far ahead of independent practice. Now, this question forced an answer, so there were numerous comments indicating that respondents without a DNP were forced to answer this question. So in the nature of full disclosure and transparency, I felt the need to go ahead and show you what the results were, especially those of you who participated in the poll. But the question, the answers are a bit skewed because the question is in fact asking, regardless of degree type, what best describes your role. So, but I say to you that there is a simple solution that can be applied when this type of situation occurs in data collection. You just throw it out. So I just wanted to make sure you knew the answer, but moving right along. In the practice setting, DNPs can make significant contributions to EBP and to evidence-based nursing education. The majority of these respondents also share my belief that in the practice setting, DNPs bring unique talents to the organizational leadership team. Alongside nurse administrators, healthcare administrators, physicians, we ought to be carving out our space in organizational leadership. As the corporate director for nursing education at the health system where I am, this is evidence-based nursing education is a fundamental in the way we operate. And in this regard, we collaborate heavily with leadership across the health system. This has been highly advantageous in terms of visibility of the DNP and the unique contributions of the DNP. As a matter of fact, our fundamentals of practice have been admired by so many that at least, at my health system, myself and others in nursing education leadership are now in positions of overseeing the organization beyond the nursing domain. I don't know if that's a blessing or a curse, but I'm sure you all have had some experiences like that too. But I think it is an acknowledgement of the work that we do when mid-level providers and physician contingents recognize that we have this sound model of evidence-based nursing education, and then they come to us asking us to be included or asking us to participate in helping them to design models like this for their disciplines. So right now, all eyes are on nursing. While nursing is pondering this question about the right fit for the DNP in nursing education, I would argue that our neighbors in medicine, in administration, as well as in other areas of nursing leadership, aren't wasting so much time so deep in the weeds. They recognize that there's a big picture issue regarding the view on the landscape. And competencies for nursing practice are continually expanding, and the roles for nursing in the practice arena are really running a parallel course. It's all about evidence-based practice, teamwork, interprofessionalism, collaboration. These are prevalent terms in the healthcare lexicon. So we're amidst a time of some rapid-fire transformation, and right now, all eyes are on us. And with all eyes on us, here's what people can see. They can see that qualified students are being turned away from nursing schools all across the country. Although enrollment in baccalaureate, master's, and doctoral programs did increase last year, in 2011 alone, more than 75,000 qualified applicants to professional nursing programs were turned away, including over 14,000 applicants to graduate programs. They're seeing that there is a shortage of nursing faculty. They're seeing that there's a shortage of resources. And they're seeing that there are challenges, huge challenges, with securing clinical placements for students in the practice setting. At the same time, across the aisle in the practice arena, greater pressure is being placed on evidence and evidence-based practice. Evidence to inform clinical decision-making, evidence to support teamwork and team training, evidence to inform research, evidence to inform nursing education. Everyone's asking for evidence to be central to our clinical practice. And this is another opportunity where we come in. Who is better prepared to interpret and translate information from all sources and transform it into useful evidence to inform practice but us? There was a time, if you remember, when this very conversation was being posed about our profession altogether. You might remember the question of, what do nurses do? And since we couldn't effectively answer that question, others answered it for us. We needed to be able to talk about what made nursing unique, what made us indispensable, and we didn't do such a good job in answering that question. So along came re-engineering, and nurses got re-engineered, or the workforce got re-engineered, primarily by non-nurses. And what we saw was that if all we could say is that we give medications, we insert IVs, we do finger sticks, etc., someone is going to ask, well, do we need an RN for that? And in many areas, nurses were being replaced by nurse extenders and technicians and patient care associates and other job titles right before our eyes. So I feel that as doctors of nursing practice, we have to be careful that we don't find ourselves in that situation yet again. We need to be able to recognize that nursing is being called onto the carpet to lead change and advance health. Leading organizations such as the IOM have identified nursing as the pivotal profession to call to action in response to the major changes in healthcare, particularly within the practice environment. We've got to be able to speak with conviction about what we do as nurses, what we do as DNPs, and why we are essential. The IOM has pointed out flaws in our nursing education structure, but has brought us back into focus on the issues of things like academic progression. I heard someone here say, I think it was yesterday, that she would be interested in a postdoc DNP. And it's true. Why should you, as a holder of one doctorate, need to start from scratch to complete a second doctorate, like I did? We need to reevaluate academic progression, and it's not only from an AAS to BSN level. I would argue that profound advancements in our perspectives, and probably more importantly, our actions regarding nursing education are necessary, and the time is now, because as far as I'm concerned, the future of nursing is now. So one of the first things we have to do is get to the table by invitation or by force. Just get to the table and take a seat. I think you'll blend right in and no one will even know you aren't invited. When you get to the table, just start talking. Talk about the many opportunities that doctors of nursing practice have to influence the healthcare arena through evidence-based nursing education. Talk about how doctors of nursing practice can transform the healthcare landscape. Just start talking. We have role models who can show us how to get to the table. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. Do you remember Michelle and Tarak Salahi? This was the couple from Virginia, and they wanted to be on some reality show. Anybody from Virginia? Okay, be proud of our role models from Virginia. She moved away. Okay, you're disowning her. I understand. But they got past layers of experienced executive branch security, and they shook the president's hand in the White House during President Obama's, one of his first dinners. Just get to the table. Now, when we get to the table, or when we set up our own table and invite people to come to our table, we need to get non-nurses to the table. This is an important component of our success. Donna Shalala has been a hugely influential non-nurse advocate for nursing. She was instrumental in the Future of Nursing report, and when she argues for nursing and spends a lot of time addressing nursing, evidence-based practice, and the contribution of advanced practice nurses. So I ask that when you get back to your respective homes, you make a commitment to use your sphere of influence and bring a non-nurse into the conversation about nursing education, its challenges, and its promise. And you'll see that this conversation that we're having today cannot exist solely within the domain of nursing. Okay, that's my point, my takeaway point there, if we want to see the change anyway. In addition to engaging known nursing supporters, engage other non-nurses. Just get them talking, right? Turn conversations that everyone is interested in into compelling arguments for nursing. This is Mayor Bloomberg. Even though he's the mayor of New York, he's probably known all across the country, right? Maybe one of the most popular mayors. Am I just being New York egocentric and thinking that? But somehow I think that he's known across the country. And Mayor Bloomberg recently enacted, he started with a proposal about preventing the sale of these big gulp sugary drinks in New York. Right, some people might applaud, some people might not, and that's exactly the way New Yorkers responded. Some people thought this was great. Other people were up in arms over this big government approach that they felt Mayor Bloomberg was participating in, telling people what they could drink and what they shouldn't drink, and if we can't order one big gulp, then I'll order two medium-sized gulps. But no one's gonna tell me how many ounces of a sugary drink I am entitled to have. That conversation caught everyone's attention. It sparked emotion, and everyone was paying attention. You know what that means? Strike while the kettle is hot. This is an opportunity for us to talk about health, wellness, promotion, health promotion, nursing, and guess what? DNPs. So you can turn an existing argument that people are already talking about into something that suits your own agenda. And yeah, maybe it's a little self-serving, but sometimes it's important to be self-serving and get your agenda in the conversation by any means necessary. Just get to the table and just start talking. Just do it, right, Nike? Just do it. I will say that some of the work we need to do in our home, our colloquial home, is to gather behind one position and rally in a unified manner behind that one position. I've noticed that when the AMA steps out to lobby or defend issues pertinent to medicine, they don't spend time airing their dirty laundry. They don't use those forums to express things that I've heard them express in other forums, like that chiropractors aren't real doctors. When it comes time for them to stand behind a position, it's hard to know who's for it and who's against it, because what it seems is that the whole profession is in agreement about this position. And I think we can learn a bit from that. Learn to take a unified voice behind a position. The results to this question, which says adding/clarifying the DNP to the existing doctoral degrees for nursing does, and people had three choices. 3% of the people selected that adding or clarifying the DNP degree adds more credential confusion than anything else. 5% of the respondents selected that adding or clarifying the DNP offers a good solution to the nursing faculty shortage issue. And the remaining selected that adding or clarifying, and the reason I say clarifying is because, you know, the DNP is not really a new degree when you think about the ND and so forth. So just to clarify why that question is stated that way, the majority, the vast majority, selected that adding or clarifying the DNP to the existing doctoral degrees for nursing helps diversify the nursing workforce at a doctoral level. So the majority of respondents felt good about the addition or clarification of the DNP within the alphabet soup to a certain extent that it existed in the past for doctoral degrees. So the message for nursing continues, and it continues to be very clear. Now, I'm not going to review the future of nursing key messages or the recommendations, but rather I would like to highlight a few salient points that underscore aspects that impact us tremendously. Nurses should be full partners with physicians and other healthcare professionals in redesigning healthcare in the United States. And we must ensure opportunities for nurses to improve practice environments by leading, diffusing, and managing collaborative improvement efforts along with physicians and other members of the healthcare team. These are extracted from the report. These are really only possible through a sound practice that is based in evidence. Anyone who works closely with physicians, and these speak heavily to the physician relationship with nursing, knows that physicians value evidence. Now, I will go as far as to say that sometimes their evidence is limited to their own life experience, but it's still evidence, right? And they don't usually want to engage in any conversation unless there's going to be some inclusion of evidence. So how you feel or your emotion or something is not necessarily the conversation that they are interested in. So this is an opportunity for us as DNPs to really enhance and enrich that component of evidence for practice in nursing and to advance the way we relate on the front line to our physician colleagues. I think we've been complacent about having conversations that have lacked evidence for a very long time, and the time is it's incumbent upon us to end that. Allow nurses to practice to the fullest extent of their education and training. Everybody has read this one at least 150 times. And this is really a gift to us, wrapped up in a bow. It's a gift to advanced practice nurses. We as translational researchers and evidence-based practice practitioners, educators, we have an opportunity to knock this one out of the park. Nurses practicing to the fullest extent of their education and training has an impact on faculty, it has an impact on the curriculum of nursing education, and it has an impact on the component of evidence in our practice. Now, of course, as a New Yorker, you know if you ask a New Yorker to come up here, you're going to see my New York perspective. So these are my New York Yankees. My New Yorkers are with me in the back. It's just interesting that when they built the new Yankee Stadium, which is like a museum, and those of you who haven't been to New York or haven't been to Yankee Stadium, you should come, that the new stadium produced more home runs, that had ever been hit in the Bronx before. So sometimes a change brings about some new accomplishments and phenomena. The Institute of Medicine and recommendation number 4 is calling for at least 80% of the nursing workforce to hold a baccalaureate degree by 2020. And in recommendation number 5, they are calling for doubling the number of nurses with doctoral degrees by 2020. And the AACN has added that implementing these IOM recommendations will propel the nursing profession forward toward better positions in terms of becoming the partners that the recommendations mentioned in the slide that I just said before with regard to physician partnerships. So this presents another tremendous opportunity for us as DNPs. In the education of the future of nurses and in development of our identity as DNPs. This will force the discussion about nursing faculty. It's very clear if you look at the trajectory that with regard to doubling the number of nurses with doctorates in 2020, that growth is going to be accomplished by the emergence of DNPs. That's who's going to achieve that doubling of the number. So with this, some recommendations include that private and public funders like HRSA and the Department of Labor, that they should expand funding programs and offer accelerated degree programs, and that university administrators and trustees should create salary and benefit packages that are market competitive, and that interest, recruit, and retain faculty. And we heard this touched upon yesterday. These messages are important because they put this point forward. I think we know this already. Someone mentioned yesterday that, you know, when you move from the practice sector, I think it was our keynote speaker, right, Peggy, that when you move from the practice sector into academia, you take a pay cut that you can't sustain your lifestyle anymore. And it's for lack of a better word, it's just plain ridiculous. So I think that having the IOM, you know, and leading organizations point out that administrators need to look at benefit packages that are really going to recruit and retain scholars at this level. It's going to force them to answer some of these questions. The qualification and level of education required for entry into nursing has been debated for many, many years, for more than 40 years. This is just to point out that enrollment in BSN programs has fallen off. This is enrollment in BSN programs. From the 1990s through 2011 here. And maybe due to the faculty challenges and to the placement challenges that we mentioned, you know, that I mentioned earlier. So this will have to be addressed, and the solution may lie in the DNP. I can tell you that at North Shore LIJ, as I mentioned, because the health system is so large and really encompasses such a vast area, We'd been debating this entry into practice issue locally for a very long time. And we gained the support of non-nurses. Of course, it was our chief nurse executive, but we had to engage non-nurses, our CEO and our CFO and others, COO, to agree that we wanted to go ahead and change our standard, that we weren't going to wait for the legislation to come through, we weren't going to wait for this to keep going back and forth every year, but that we were going to go ahead and make a change that would influence and impact nursing within our sphere of influence, but that could have tremendous implications. And what we did was we set a new standard that all nurses hired, this is in September of 2010, that all nurses hired into the health system at that point needed to either have a BSN or get one within 5 years. Get enrolled in 2 years and graduate in 5 years, otherwise you'll be terminated. I don't have to tell you that we got a lot of pushback. And it is a battle, but it's a position that we're not backing off on. And it has had implications for people outside of those new hires for whom the mandate applies. Because now all the remaining 43,000 employees, the 13,000 incumbent nurses who didn't have bachelor's degrees recognize that, if the new people are going to come in with bachelor's or have to get one in 5 years, when promotion opportunities and other things arise, I might be the lowest man on the totem pole in terms of academic preparation. And now we're in a place where we can't even handle the influx of people who want to get enrolled in BSN programs. We've had to set up special cohorts with our clinical, our academic partners in the area just to try to get all of the nurses enrolled in some kind of a program. And what a wonderful problem to have. Foster achievement of higher levels of education for nurses through seamless academic progression. Everybody knows about this one. Key message number two, nursing is unique among the professions in terms of the fact that we have multiple educational pathways leading into entry into practice. So we need to look at opportunities for seamless transition into higher degree programs. As I mentioned before, I think we should consider the level of education that our colleagues are holding, doctoral levels for PT and pharmacy, and of course for medicine, and that many of you perhaps who are professors and deans and so forth at health sciences colleges are probably looking at team education across the health professions, which is highly recommended. So there are many opportunities for us DMPs in the world of evidence-based nursing education. An opportunity for representation in organizational leadership. DMPs offer never before existing opportunities for nursing leadership education, for practice-based nursing education research. new ways for nursing education to lead transformative change through the promotion of evidence-based nursing education. We have the opportunity to rethink the state of nursing education and advance the state of the science around nursing education. But we do need to unify and utilize this opportunity for change in healthcare to capitalize on rethinking nursing education and take a unified position on what we believe. We can develop and advance the evidence in nursing education, we as DNPs, through nursing education research. For example, we can examine this noble phenomenon. I don't know how well you can see it. Are we using yesterday's methods to prepare tomorrow's workforce? You know, on a microcosmic level, our learners are telling us this every day. Please stop boring me, or, you know, you're torturing me, you're killing me with methods that may have worked for you, but they don't suit me because I'm a different kind of learner. We have opportunities to examine the way we educate our nurses, future nurses. We can dispel some long-standing myths like this. In case you can't read it in the back, it says, everyone knows learning must be serious and difficult, and you must remain seated at all times. No fun allowed. We can test and question methods, new methods of teaching and learning, and present this nursing education research. We can examine questions like, how effective is clinical simulation on practice? And this is our simulation center back where I am. We are heavy on simulation. We can examine questions like, do audience response systems transform the classroom and the learning experience? If they do, why, how? We can ask questions about nurse transition programs, nurse residency programs, on actual performance in the practice setting. What role does empowerment play in nurses speaking up and standing up for best practice in practice? These have great implications. They impact the Joint Commission's NEVER events, national patient safety goals, and they are ours for the taking because we are the ones who own this domain. These are best practice questions. Practice-based, outcomes-based, knowledge acquisition, behavior change questions, these are critical for nursing education, and we're in a position to take them on. Promoting education, academic progression, and scholarship, this is key for DNPs as translational researchers in the practice sector. This is huge. We need to be able to demonstrate outcomes assessments that support that the DNP can change practice through our unique contribution to advancing evidence-based nursing education. We can put an end to this. We don't want this to be our students' graduation speeches. We can test, evaluate, we can be innovative, we can promote change, we can reconstruct nursing education. Shaping the new healthcare landscape. The new healthcare landscape is a garden of things like meaningful use, accountable care, bundle payments, models of care, patient-centered care, care across the continuum, advanced practice, access to care, wellness, primary care, quality, financial performance, patient experience, HCAHPS, Press Ganey, core measures. I could go on for days. This is what is on our landscape, from the practice perspective anyway. And we have an opportunity to carve out our place in any of the above that I just mentioned. These are ours for the taking. Bridging education, research, and practice. This is our opportunity to close the loop with practice informing academia and academia informing practice, practice informing research, research informing practice. There is a loop here where we fit in perfectly, and we need to seize that opportunity as research partners. We can bridge a gap. Anybody know what this is? We've got people from all across the country here. Anybody recognize this bridge? Lake Pontchartrain, who said it? We got some Louisiana, yeah, okay, some Gulf friends with us. So this is Lake Pontchartrain, and the reason I have this up here is because I just thought that it is an incredible exemplar of bridging gaps. So each day I learned 30,000 cars cross Lake Pontchartrain on the longest bridge in the world, the Lake Pontchartrain Causeway. And this causeway actually consists of two parallel bridges that cross Lake Pontchartrain in southern Louisiana. The longer of the two bridges is 23.5 miles long. The southern terminal end of the causeway is in a suburb of New Orleans. The northern terminus is in a city called Mandeville. What I found phenomenal is that the speed limit is 65 miles an hour, 24 hours a day. And I'm from New York, where driving is aggressive. But if I look at this bridge and what kind of a gap it's bridging, 65 miles an hour, they are blazing across that gap. I think we can learn from this. Final opportunity that I want to present to you is around workforce development. So remember the 3.2 million of us who are already out in the workforce. Now, of course, I remain concerned with things like access to care, providing care to patients, supporting those interested in entering the workforce, but we have a unique opportunity with those already in the workforce. DNPs can support nursing education in practice. We can support transition into practice for new graduates and transitioning nurses. We can lead the way to creating environments that are nurturing and scholarly and that transform the practice arena and impact the very things that we circle the drain over in the practice sector. And those are recruitment, retention, orientation, preceptorships. We've been beating this to death forever. The implications of patient safety, the quality agenda, these are not new. Someone can take this by the horns, and that someone can be us. The ongoing focus on political campaigns and market analysis, the State of the Union, is all focusing on the nation's health. That's the hot topic right now. So this is a critical time for us for nursing education. You know, the kettle is hot, as I said before, and I think it's a good time for us to strike. Who's better suited to stand for public policy, patient advocacy, workforce development, evidence-based nursing education, et cetera, the shortage issue, in times of threats to healthcare than us? People are listening. So when I think about the message to nursing, I think about one thing. Opportunity is knocking. And with that comes some pontification about readiness, right? That quintessential when opportunity knocks, will you be ready question. So the DNP in the practice setting includes the primary care provider, the organizational leader, the nurse educator, the quality expert, but we'll all be known under one title, and that is Doctor of Nursing Practice, known as the seeker, the bridger, the translator of evidence into practice. The competencies needed to practice have expanded, especially in the domains of public health. Geriatrics is on the rise, leadership, health policy, systems improvements and change, research, teamwork, collaboration. And these new competencies place increased pressure on the educational system and its curriculum. Care within the hospital and the community settings has definitely become much more complex. In hospitals, nurses are the ones making critical decisions for caring for sicker patients, frailer patients, and they're doing this with more sophisticated life-saving technology. Electronic health records are making the work environment good but complex. Nurses are being called upon to fill primary care roles and to help manage chronic illness, thereby preventing readmissions, another problem that's being looked at carefully, acute episodes and disease progression. We're expected to use a variety of technology tools and complex information systems to analyze and synthesize information that ultimately ends up in improvements in quality of care. So across settings, we, nurses, are being called upon to coordinate care, collaborate with a variety of healthcare professionals. The shortage of nurses in the positions of primary care and faculty are really on the forefront. Research and implementation science is also on the forefront. These are opportunities for us to respond to these demands that are existing in today's evolving healthcare environment. This is an opportunity for us to come forward and present ourselves, doctors of nursing practice, as a solution to the many complexities that exist. The future of nursing is now. So I would say that from September 19th to September 21st, we've heard exciting nursing practice doctorate outcomes findings, clinical practice projects, research. We've been exposed to quite a bit here at this conference. These are exceptional contributions to the discipline of nursing that have come specifically from the DNP degree. And what we're enjoying is the result of a deliberate effort to persevere in evidence-based nursing education. Deliberate effort or deliberate practice is a phenomenon that has been studied. And deliberate practice leads to predictable outcomes, the Sullenberg effect. Again, I would think that everyone, whether you're from New York or not, is familiar with this situation that took place in the Hudson River. So sometimes opportunity comes and it changes our landscape. Other times opportunists come and they change our landscape. And yet still other times circumstances come that force us to look at our own landscape and determine whether the path we paved works the way we expect it to and want it to, and whether in times of crisis it will sustain us or be our demise. So my questions to you are you promoting yourself and DNP colleagues as the valuable missing link in the evidence-based nursing education chain? Are you recognized as the expert in gathering, disseminating, and promoting evidence-based practice? What will you do when you get back to your home to ensure that we as DNPs are recognized as valuable assets in the application of research into practice, meeting quality outcomes and bottom lines in the practice arena and advancing evidence-based nursing education? I would like to again thank the Doctors of Nursing Practice Group and all of you for your attention. As a DNP myself in nursing education, I think that the work that you all do, particularly the Doctors of Nursing Practice Group, is exemplary, and I'm very thankful for this opportunity to talk with you today. So I'm not sure how much time we have left. I think the next session starts at 10 minutes. So, okay. So if anyone has comments, questions, we can have some dialogue.
Hi, I'm Dr. Deb Murray from Old Dominion University. First, I want to say what an excellent presentation that
Thank
was.
You. Thank you.
Although I was born in New York, I don't live there now, and I did get a little teary about the World Trade Center. I do want to highlight one comment that you made, and that is we need to learn from our physician colleagues. Every conference that I attend, I start talking to people about what professional organizations they belong in. I think when we all graduated from maybe our BSN, our diploma program, many of us were probably members of the ANA, and we've let that membership lapse over time. We cannot decide which organization is going to be our voice. Physicians have decided the AMA is their voice. We can't decide. So I think as a profession, we need to look at that, and we need to say, who is going to speak for us?
That is so true. And, you know, I was in a conversation at the table yesterday with another colleague here who's a professor in Massachusetts, and we were just talking about that very same thing, that as nurses, we weren't necessarily cultivated to be bulldogs and fighting for the things that we really need to fight for now. So this is kind of new for us, and I would agree that many nurses are disenchanted with the voice representing nursing. But we are the ones, you know, who have to be participatory, as you're saying, and contribute to what organization that's going to be, what position they're going to take, and make sure that our interests are represented. It is a new day for us with regard to being on the forefront that way. I think we're not used to lobbying, and well, we're used to lobbying, but not the way the AMA has. I think Dr. O'Dell said he wanted you to stay here and take a stretch break before the next plenary. So since you're being held captive, you may as well get all your comments off your chest.
I think that everything that you've said is very inspirational, but I think that one problem in my community is that people can get an ADN for a lot less expense than a BSN. And also, I live in a rural community in Missouri, and so there aren't a lot of options for people to be able to get their BSN locally. There are several schools that come to the area. But I think until we do something about the cost of education, that really is an issue. And I would also like to say that the Cardinals are the world champions.
Touché. Yes, I agree. And I think behind the scenes we are hearing, be your political views, whatever they may, that conversation about collegiate preparation and the debt that is associated with that, and the fact that we or our children should not have to graduate from college with these enormous debts, that should not be the norm. So I think that conversation is definitely making its way to the national arena. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine. Thank you for your presentation. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
A couple of things. I think leadership, part of this whole conversation about opportunity, and I had talked about it as well, is in the Affordable Care Act. There are so many opportunities for advanced practice nursing. And I don't know if you ever talked to your physician colleagues, but something about like less than 15% of them actually pay membership to the AMA. It's about perception. Most primary care physicians do not belong to the AMA. Yeah, it's like 5%. Yeah, mm-hmm. I know it's a ridiculously low number.
Mm-hmm. She just looked up.
So it's about the perception of what the AMA puts out there, and they do it because they have a lot of money in their lobby. But we are making some strides in nursing, and one area we did, and those of you who are nurse practitioners in the room know this, that the college and the academy for nurse practitioners have finally decided to merge. And I think it's a huge opportunity, because in both of those organizations, it's all about the DNPs. It's about the advanced practice nurses. So while I agree that we may need to do some things around our leadership and about political activism in the ANA, let us not knock some of the progress that's also being made. Mm-hmm. And that was just one really good example. The implementation of the IOM recommendations is happening at the local level. So my comment to all of you in the room is, what do you know about what is going on with the implementation of those recommendations in your state, in your area? Because RWJ, in their infinite wisdom, and I'm an RWJ health policy fellow, I believe in what they did with that report. It was inspired by getting the IOM to put their stamp on it. But they also are funding the implementation. They didn't just put out a report to be left on the shelf. So what is happening? Because there's lots of things going on, and you need to get involved in what's going on and how we implement it.
That's so true. Thank you for that.
Hello, I'm Mei Kang, and I'm a DMP. I also blog for Advance for MPs and PAs. I think we all agree in this conference that we feel DMP is the right thing to do. However, I do still get plenty of questions and comments on the website about why are we doing this, and are we just creating another degree? And I think it's important that as DMPs that we talk about our experience as a DMP, how this degree has opened doors for us. How has it done for us? How has it done for the profession? And how has having this degree improved patient care? And so I would like to ask you, since you have your DMP, and how has this degree affected you in in leadership, organizational leadership, if you don't mind sharing with us.
Sure, and I think I can sum it up pretty quickly by saying that the very first thing it does is leverage the playing field. Because when you're in organizational leadership and you are among colleagues who are highly academically prepared, while experience and so forth matters, so does credentials and credibility. So it is very important that when you enter that table, that boardroom and so forth, that you're able to leverage the playing field with your degree, which is the highest degree in the practice area in which you practice. It's no longer a matter of discussion, right? So if people often will say, if I'm wearing a badge or something and it says DNP, and then they'll say, what's a DNP? Of course, that question, I get that question a lot. And then when I explain that it is the practice doctorate for nursing, first of all, people didn't know that there was one, but then there are no more questions asked about whether I am credible in terms of nursing. Right, so I think that as we talk about the members of the healthcare team on the front line, and sometimes, unfortunately, the nurse being the least prepared person in educationally on the front line with regard to patient care, it's also important in the boardroom and in organizational leadership that the nurse has a high level of academic preparation and expertise, which is captured by having the degree. So that's the first, probably the overarching benefit. Yes, thank you for your question.
Thank you very much for the motivational speech you've given us here today. As an educator in practice, I want to commend you on taking that step. It's visionary to put the boundaries of practice for our caregivers at the bedside to have that BSN degree. And I really believe that as leaders such as yourself, such as those that I work for in my practice setting at University of Louisville Hospital, to take that step and to ensure that outcomes are the focus, the patient is the focus. That's the reason why we do what we do. And to integrate and to have that scholarship of application to be present at the bedside is just really what we're trying to do. So I just wanted to thank you very much.
And thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Dr. Jeanette Nash from Dallas, Texas, Parkland Health and Hospital System. I want to commend you on your approach in this presentation. Your use of your PowerPoint was effective. Additionally, getting at the table is where we need to really start, and I think that you pushed that very well, and I wanted just to commend you overall for your presentation and style with what you brought here today.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Okay, well, I think it's probably fair enough to say that we'll transition into our plenary session next, and everyone can probably stretch, right? Okay, thank you, everyone.